Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, this divinely appointed imam from the household of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. So, we have a really interesting conversation between Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam and Husayn bin Ubaidah. Now, this conversation revolves around the issue of kafara, which is commonly translated as expiation. And so this kafara is really interesting. It is when some of the laws of the Almighty Allah are broken. This is the formal way of making up for those sins. And this is what is called kafara or expiation. It's not on all sins, but it is on specific types of sins. In one instance, it deals with fasting. And so here, Husayn bin Ubaidah, he talks to Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam in this conversation, and he asks Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, "O my master, O Mola, some man had vowed to fast on a certain day, but on that day, he ended up having intimate relations with his wife. What is the kafara, the expiation on that individual?" And so here, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he replies to Husayn bin Ubaidah, and he says that that individual who had vowed, he had done a nadr, a promise or an oath to fast on a specific day, and on that specific day he ended up having intimate relations with his wife, this individual has to fast for one day instead of that day. So they have to fast on another day, which makes up for the fasting that they were not able to do, and they have to set free a slave. Now, this is the aspect that we want to talk about, this idea of setting free a slave as a kafara or an expiation. Now, before we get to that, it's interesting to note that there are different kinds of kafara or different kinds of expiations that one can do, which are specified in the religion of Islam. So, for example, one is to free a slave, one is to feed 10 needy persons, or giving poor people clothes, and these kind of things. There's also the numbers of feeding the amount of people. It varies depending upon what the kafara is in the specific situation. But what is common is that either you free a slave, or you feed a certain amount of people, or you give a certain amount of poor people clothes, and these kind of things. So what we want to talk about, that what we learn from this conversation, is this idea of freeing a slave and how this is one of the ways in which Islam came forth and tried to free the people. Islam came to abolish slavery. So at that time, and even before the advent of Islam, we find that the age of ignorance and pre-Islamic Arabia, slavery was something which was part of the culture and the socio-political status, and it was something that was quite entrenched in the society of the pre-Islamic Arabs. And when Islam came, it gradually began to abolish slavery. And one of the ways in which Islam came forth and began to abolish slavery was to consider these kafara and these expiations. One of these kafaras was to free a slave. Now, sure, in the modern day, in the present day, this doesn't seem like it is applicable to us, but at that day, this was very much applicable, and it was a very big deal. So, for example, you vowed to do a fast, and for whatever reason, you didn't, right? Then the supposed kafara was to free a slave. So, in this manner, Islam came and slowly began to abolish slavery. Even the divinely appointed imams, they bought slaves from the market, and then after training them and teaching them, making them independent and strong, and eventually after 1 year, they would free all of those slaves. And then many a time they would marry the slaves, the female slaves and the male slaves. They would free them and marry them and help them to establish homes and households. And we find that some of the imams, they freed slaves in the number of thousands. So this a very beautiful theme, which we pick up from this conversation that Hussein bin Ubaidah had with the divinely appointed Imam. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi, alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Marching for Our Martyrs and Palestine was the name of the rally organized by the IHH, Humanitarian Relief Foundation in Turkey. Speaking in Istanbul, the IHH General President Bülent Yıldırım urged Egypt to open the Rafah border crossing for humanitarian aid to enter Gaza and for the wounded to get out of the besieged strip for treatment.
We came here today to denounce Israeli occupation crimes against humanity in Gaza. We are here to defend innocent men, women, and children who are under brutal bombardment every day. As you can see, hundreds took to the streets in Istanbul and Ankara to denounce Israelis' brutal attacks.
Elderly men, women, and children, people from all walks of life, marched the streets of Istanbul chanting anti-occupation slogans. Demonstrators said what is happening in Gaza is a genocide, calling on the whole world to stand against this criminal act and to call for a ceasefire.
We came here to show the world that we are standing against Zionism, we are against the killing of innocent civilians, against genocides and ethnic cleansing.
Slogans such as Criminal Israel and Free Palestine were chanted by angry protesters who say one day the land will be liberated from the Israeli occupation.
We are here to show the world our stance from what's happening in Gaza today. More than 2 months and the world is silent. We will not be silent. We are here to let the whole world hear our voice. We will forever say Israel is a terrorist state.
Pro-Palestinian rallies have been taking place around the world since the Israeli-US genocide in Gaza started on October 7. Demonstrators here say they will continue their protests and demonstrations until a ceasefire is reached. They say they will never leave their brothers in Gaza alone. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
With Christmas celebrations in Al-Quds and Bethlehem cancelled, the Christian Palestinians residing in Lebanon also have no reason to be joyous. Mass Christmas services have transformed into prayers of mourning. Nahida and Samar Antoun were killed by Israeli sniper fire in Gaza. They were killed as they took refuge in a monastery.
They were killed by Israeli sniper fire, and what we heard from the Pope is not true. It was not by mistake. No one is killed in Gaza by mistake. This is a Zionist policy, and they purposely kill everyone, especially the children and every Arab, no matter what their religion, because we are a thorn in their throat. But we will remain, and they will leave.
They started shelling the churches just like they shelled the mosques. We were first confident that when they go to the church, they will be safe. But sniper fire hit them in the heart of the church. So there is no safe haven in Gaza. We are not celebrating this year just like Al-Quds.
We are mourning all of Palestine's martyrs, not only our relatives.
Palestinian Christians in Lebanon stress that the Israeli regime does not differentiate between Muslims or Christians, since they are all with the resistance.
We salute the resistance in Gaza, Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, and Syria, and we tell them not to stop. These racist Zionists are even worse than the Nazis. What they are doing is more heinous than what the Nazis did. If the Arabs want to forsake Al-Quds, fine. We are the ones who will liberate it with the efforts of our heroic resistance inside Palestine, and victory is very near.
Despite the sadness in the hearts of the grown-ups, they are attempting to put a smile on the faces of the children who also remember Gaza.
We're giving these gifts to the children of this camp since it's not their crime that the Zionist occupation is killing children in Palestine. We want to give them some joy as we have been doing for the last 5 years.
We do not feel there is a holiday, but we're trying to put some happiness in the hearts of children here while we remember that our children in Palestine are being killed every day. The Israelis do not differentiate between Muslim and Christian. It's a monster that was planted on our land and it kills all people alike.
With tens of thousands already killed by the Israeli regime in Palestine, people at churches in Lebanon remember the oppressed people of Palestine and pray, may Christ be with them. For Palestinian Christians in Lebanon, this Christmas is an occasion to mourn rather than celebrate. As they remember their kin who were martyred in Gaza, their biggest wish of the year is that they may one day celebrate Christmas in their churches as they come back home to a free Palestine. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Iranian Defense Ministry spokesman has warned that Israel will have to pay the price for assassinating Iran's senior military advisor in Syria, General Seyed Reza Mousavi. Brigadier General Reza Talayinik noted the revenge against Israel will be fulfilled at the proper time and place. Speaking at the press conference on Tuesday, the spokesman said the Zionist regime's move to assassinate Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Brigadier General Mousavi in Damascus, reveals the terrorist nature of Israel. He added that the murder is a clear violation of Syria's sovereignty.
This crime definitely deserves punishment. The Israelis must pay the price for their recent terrorist actions. Iran will give a smart and a strong response to the Israeli strike at the appropriate time and place, and in such a way that the Zionist regime's purposes in carrying out these attacks won't be fulfilled.
Brigadier General Seyed Reza Mousavi was assassinated in a missile strike on a neighborhood in Damascus. He was in charge of the resistance front's logistics in Syria. Mousavi was also comrade of IRGC's late commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone attack near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. The IRGC strongly condemned Mousavi's assassination, saying the occupying Israeli regime will pay for this crime.
The developments in the past 4 years following the assassination of General Soleimani show that our enemies, especially the United States, have obtained opposite results from such acts of terrorism. Over the past 4 years, the ideals and patterns of resistance grew in the region and even in the world. Contrary to the terrorist goal of the United States, the resistance front has gained more power than before. The most important issue in the region and the world is still the genocide in Gaza, and the failure and defeat of the Zionists has been revealed to the world, and the regime is going through a dark period.
Experts believe Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps is revered in West Asia for its key role in helping the Iraqi and Syrian armies eliminate the Daesh terror group. And now Israel has once again demonstrated its hostility toward the IRGC and its counter-terrorism campaign by assassinating one of its senior military advisors in Syria. Iranian officials believe that the recent Israeli crimes in the region, such as the Gaza War or the assassination of the Iranian commander in Syria, shows the continued weakness and failure of the Tel Aviv regime, which leads Israel to collapse and complete destruction. Salman Kujur, Tehran.
On October 7th, the Israeli regime launched brutal bombardment of the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming tens of thousands of innocent civilians. Palestinian journalists and media workers were no exception. The Israeli regime has so far killed more than 100 Palestinian journalists as well as dozens of their family members. According to Reporters Without Borders, Palestinian journalists have no safe refuge and no way of leaving the blockaded territory.
Every day, Zionist forces target journalists in Gaza, and if they cannot kill them, they kill their family members. The Zionist regime has killed scores of our colleagues along with their families. Tel Aviv wants to silence us and prevent us from exposing Israeli war crimes.
Over the course of the Israeli onslaught, dozens of Gazan journalists have also been reported missing, detained, or injured. Israeli forces have also targeted their media offices and homes.
My message to the international community is that we here, as a journalist, we didn't feel that we are safe. We are targeted, and every time we can be bombed with the Israeli occupation forces. So my message is that we have to be saved. We are doing our work. We are only covering the acts that Israeli made here in the Gaza Strip. So we are trying to get this message to the world.
Experts have dubbed the Israeli aggression since October 7th as the deadliest period for journalists covering military conflicts in more than three decades.
We were displaced from the Tel al-Hawa neighborhood in Gaza City to the house of our friend, the journalist Adel Zorob, in Rafah. He hosted us for 70 days, and a few days ago, my family was sleeping in the room close to his room, and an Israeli airstrike killed him along with several members of his family and my family.
Reporters Without Borders has described the Gaza Strip as the graveyard of journalists.
Journalists in Gaza have been at the forefront of the campaign to expose Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. Experts say Palestinian journalists are paying the price for the international apathy toward Israeli war crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
For the first time in living memory, Christmas festivities have been cancelled in the occupied territories. No celebrations will be held in mourning and honor of thousands of Palestinians killed in the Gaza Strip because of the Israeli genocidal war. The head of the Greek Orthodox Church in Ramallah told me that only prayers and religious rituals dedicated to the people of Gaza would be performed with hopes for the Israeli war to come to an end.
It's a big crime what's going on in the Gaza Strip. How could we celebrate? There is a part of us, part of our Palestinian people are crying, are hungry, are thirsty, and are sleeping in tents and in streets. This forced displacement of Palestinian families is unacceptable. The Palestinian Christians refuse to leave Gaza. They remain there steadfast, defending their homeland and their churches, as they are part of the Palestinian people.
Christian Palestinian families came to the church to pray, gripped with helplessness and pain amid Israel's war on Gaza. They say they are unable to celebrate while Palestinians in Gaza are suffering, while Christian Palestinians were being killed and churches destroyed.
All churches in Ramallah had been agreed upon not to celebrate Christmas this year because of the war in Gaza. There are Christians and there are churches, and the third most old church in the world present in Gaza had been bombed by the Israeli military. That's really crucial, and that's really bad.
We are unable to celebrate this year. We decided there will be no festive lights and Christmas tree as usual to mark the holiday, while all our people in Gaza are being killed. I watch the news and I see the children are either killed or they are homeless in the cold and under the heavy rain. It's heartbreaking.
Meanwhile, in the supposed birthplace of Jesus Christ, Bethlehem, in the south of the occupied West Bank, instead of the huge decorated Christmas tree, an artwork called Nativity Under the Rubble in Manger Square was put up, representing only darkness and sadness. Christmas is not the same in the occupied territory that is grieving for Gaza this year. No celebrations will be held in the occupied territories that Christians all over the world consider as a holy land. But they forget it's occupied and that Palestinian Christians there in Gaza are being killed by the Israeli occupation forces. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah. Marcus Marching for Our Martyrs and Palestine was the name of the rally organized by the IHH, Humanitarian Relief Foundation in Turkey. Speaking in Istanbul, the IHH General President Bülent Yıldırım urged Egypt to open the Rafah border crossing for humanitarian aid to enter Gaza and for the wounded to get out of the besieged strip for treatment.
We came here today to denounce Israeli occupation crimes against humanity in Gaza. We are here to defend innocent men, women and children who are under brutal bombardment every day. As you can see, hundreds took to the streets in Istanbul and Ankara to denounce Israel's brutal attacks.
Elderly men, women and children, people from all walks of life, marched the streets of Istanbul chanting anti-occupation slogans. Demonstrators said what is happening in Gaza is a genocide, calling on the whole world to stand against this criminal act and to call for a ceasefire.
We came here to show the world that we are standing against Zionism, we are against the killing of innocent civilians, against genocides and ethnic cleansing.
Slogans such as Criminal Israel and Free Palestine were chanted by angry protesters who say one day the land will be liberated from the Israeli occupation.
We are here to show the world our stance from what's happening in Gaza today. More than 2 months and the world is silent. We will not be silent. We are here to let the whole world hear our voice. We will forever say Israel is a terrorist state.
Pro-Palestinian rallies have been taking place around the world since the Israeli-U.S. genocide in Gaza started on October 7. Demonstrators here say they will continue their protests and demonstrations until a ceasefire is reached. They say they will never leave their brothers in Gaza alone. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Foreign guests, including senior Palestinian leaders as well as politicians and high-ranking officials from over 60 countries, gathered in Tehran in solidarity with Palestinians, particularly those in the Gaza Strip, nearly 80 days into the Israeli onslaught on the territory. They demanded a permanent ceasefire, with attending ultra-Orthodox Jews taking it even further and calling for an end to the occupation of the entire Palestine.
This occupation has no excuse. They're using my religion, Judaism. Not one of them is covering the head. They're using the name of Judaism. In 1947, in the United Nations records, representing the Jewish community said, "We furthermore wish to express our definite opposition to a Jewish state in any part of Palestine."
Israel is able to continue as a state based on two pillars. One is the army and the economical force inside Palestine, occupied Palestine, and the other one is the international support. October 7th and what happened after that has changed a lot the narrative about this conflict, especially because of social media, and thanks to social media, Palestinians were able for the first time to bypass the mainstream media.
Today, we have a chance to stand up for justice. We live in a day and age where it is easy to find out the truth, and the truth of what is happening in Gaza is before our very eyes. Obviously, we will not idly watch the atrocities committed against women, children, and in general, all civilians in Gaza.
This is a conflict in which Israel, for the first time, has lost the narrative.
There is a large part of the world which is united and which is ready to act. Now then we have to come to the another phases, how to act concretely.
It is real time to stop talking and to start doing. There are no middle way. Either we are with Gaza, with Palestinians, with people in Palestine, or we are against them.
At the panel discussions, participants from different nationalities and faiths focused on practical measures and strategies to mount pressure on Israel to stop its attacks on Gaza and allow the delivery of international humanitarian aid to the territory.
Most people around the world are empathizing with our brothers and sisters in Palestine. They want to do something. Actually, people of no faith whatsoever, and some of different ideology, different faith, they will want to do something. They cannot stand to see this ongoing bloodshed.
We have to talk about this. We have to communicate and express solidarity with Palestinians.
We should send boats to Gaza. We should send boats with humanitarian aid.
All the participants reiterated that it is beyond imagination that more than 20,000 Palestinians have so far been killed in the Israeli attacks on Gaza since October the 7th. They all called for a ceasefire.
The fact that the panelists come from different backgrounds and different nationalities and different faiths shows that the issue of Palestine transcends all boundaries, and today it has become a humanitarian issue. Gisumi Shahmani, Tehran.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Muradi. Please stay tuned. Verily, Allah is all-forgiving, all-merciful. By believing in the mercy and forgiveness of Allah, we can repent from our past sins. Allah's message to His people is that He will forgive the sins, so we must be hopeful in the mercy of Allah. We must welcome the mercy of Allah. It is a door to salvation and prosperity. As Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam stated in his dua on the day of Arafah, I go towards Allah with my eyes, my ears, my tongue, my feet, and my hands.
میگم برای اونایی که برای اولین بار اومد میدم خیلی معروفه که موسی همه رو جمع کرد برای دعا دعا کنن بارون.
In a story we read that Prophet Moses gathered the people to pray for rain. The people prayed and there was no raining. Allah told Moses that there is a sinner in the crowd and that's why your prayers are not answered. Moses told the people the reason for not raining. The sinner who was ashamed of his bad deeds told himself, I cannot introduce myself as a sinner now, so it's better to sit down and repent to Allah. As he started repenting to Allah, the rain started to pour down from the sky. This means that if we want the mercy of Allah to pour down in our life, we must believe in His forgiveness and we must repent from our past sins. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech. This was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Muradi. To find out more about this program and other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the United States, the Supreme Court on Friday, 22nd of December, rejected a request by Special Counsel Jack Smith to fast-track arguments on whether Donald Trump has any immunity from federal prosecution for alleged crimes he committed whilst in office. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The Supreme Court on Friday, 22nd of December, declined for now to take up a landmark case over whether former President Donald Trump is absolutely immune from prosecution for alleged crimes committed whilst he was in office, a move that allows the appeals process to play out first. The court issued a one-line, unsigned order denying the request from Special Counsel Jack Smith. The petition for a writ of certiorari before judgment is denied. There were no noted dissents. The Supreme Court's decision on Friday, 22nd of December, is a blow to Special Counsel Jack Smith and his team of prosecutors, who have pushed the courts to move quickly to hold trials in the Washington case and the second prosecution in Florida, before the presidential election swings into full gear. Trump's attorneys, meanwhile, have urged the courts to delay the trials until after the presidential election. The special counsel's office declined to comment on the court's decision. The Supreme Court has unanimously rejected Jack Smith's desperate attempt to short-circuit our great constitution, Donald Trump wrote in a post on his Truth Social platform on Friday afternoon, 22nd of December. Crooked Joe Biden and his henchmen waited 3 years to bring this sham case, and now they have tried and failed to rush this witch hunt through the courts of law. Of course, I'm entitled to presidential immunity. The High Court's rejection paves the way for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit to rule first on whether the former president can be prosecuted for alleged attempting to thwart the transfer of presidential power after the 2020 presidential election. The move does not preclude the losing party, Donald Trump or Jack Smith, from seeking the Supreme Court's review again after the appeals court makes its determination. Looking forward to the very important arguments on presidential immunity in front of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, Donald Trump wrote on Friday. But it could impact the timing of the trial, which is set to begin on 4th of March in Washington, D.C., depending on how quickly proceedings in the appeals court play out. The Washington, D.C. case has been pushed while Trump pursues his appeal, and whether the prosecution can move forward hinges on the outcome of the dispute over his immunity claim. If the three-judge panel sides with Jack Smith and finds Donald Trump is not immune, the former president could then appeal that decision to either the full appeals court or ask the Supreme Court to review the case at that point. Special counsel Jack Smith could do the same if the court sides with Donald Trump. If the Supreme Court declines, the appellate court's decision will stand. If the justices agree to take it up, they will have the final say. Jack Smith's prosecution will either be able to move forward or Donald Trump will be immune from prosecution for acts he committed whilst in office. Each phase in the process will require a legal back and forth of new court filings, potential oral arguments, and the time for the courts to craft their opinions. Even with the appeals court rapid timeline for reviewing the immunity issue, the trial date could still be pushed back if the matter isn't resolved before 4th of March. The current dispute arrived at the nation's highest court on the heels of a decision from U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan, who rejected arguments from Donald Trump's legal team that he is entitled to broad immunity from criminal prosecution for acts within the outer perimeter of his official duties. In her 1st of December ruling, Judge Tanya Chutkan found that the presidency does not confer a lifelong get-out-of-jail free pass and said Trump may be subject to federal investigation, indictment, prosecution, conviction, and punishment for any criminal acts he committed whilst in office. The cable broadcaster CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. The Supreme Court on Friday, 22nd of December, rejected a request by Special Counsel Jack Smith to fast-track arguments on whether Donald Trump has any immunity from federal prosecution for alleged crimes he committed whilst in office, a move that will likely delay his trial. The court did not explain its reasoning, and there were no noted dissents. The court's decision is a major blow to Special Counsel Jack Smith, who made an extraordinary gamble when he asked the justices to take the rare step of skipping a federal appeals court and quickly deciding a fundamental issue in his election subversion criminal case against Donald Trump. Both sides will have the option of appealing an eventual ruling by the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals up to the High Court, but the court's move is a major victory for Donald Trump, whose strategy of delay in the criminal case included mounting a protracted fight over the immunity question, which must be settled before his case goes to trial. An expedited review of the issue is already underway at the D.C. Circuit, which had scheduled oral arguments for 9th of January. The election subversion trial is currently set to begin in March. The real question is what happens then, said Steve Vladeck, CNN's Supreme Court analyst and a professor at the University of Texas School of Law. Steve Vladeck added, assuming the Court of Appeals rejects Donald Trump's claim, will it keep the trial on hold pending further review from the Supreme Court, or will it allow the trial to go forward and force Donald Trump to seek a stay from the Supreme Court? It's still possible that the trial would begin on 4th of March, but the Supreme Court's apparent willingness to let the D.C. Circuit go first makes it at least somewhat and perhaps significantly less likely. In urging the court to not take the case, Donald Trump's attorneys argued the special counsel was trying to rush to decide the issue with reckless abandon. The fact that this case arises in the vortex of political dispute warrants caution and not haste, Trump attorneys wrote in the court papers. After the Supreme Court's rejection, Donald Trump continued to insist he has immunity from federal prosecution, writing on social media on Friday, 22nd of December, "I was president. It was my right and duty to investigate and speak on the rigged and stolen 2020 presidential election. Looking forward to the very important arguments on presidential immunity in front of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals," he wrote on social media platform on Friday. Trump's legal team has asked the appeals court earlier this month to examine the immunity ruling issued by District Judge Tanya Chutkan, who is overseeing his criminal case.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi...
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahruddin was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, "Tuhide kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRI, the English radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the religious and scholarly life of the most outstanding Shiite dignitaries all across the history of Islam. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, there are two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai. Sheikh Fadai, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, salam alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about another outstanding Shiite dignitary, one of the most outstanding Shiite poets of Islam of the 2nd and the 3rd century Hijra. He was among the Sahabi of Imam al-Kazim and Imam al-Reza alayhi salam, also Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. No one but the Ibn Ibn Ali al-Khuzai. So many qasaid, so many poems, elegies and eulogies, we can say, are mentioned and are quoted from this outstanding poem, the Ibn al-Khuzai. First, let's be familiar with his early life. Sheikh Rouhani, give us some information about his early life, the Ibn al-Khuzai. Who was he?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The Ibn Ibn Ali al-Khuzai lived in the 2nd and the 3rd century, Islamic century. Of course, he was among the companions of three imams, Imam al-Kadhim, Imam al-Ridha, as well as Imam al-Jawad, alayhim as-salatu was-salam. He came to Ma'arif, to Khurasan, in the presence of Imam Ridha, alayhi salatu was-salam, because he had composed a beautiful poem about the Ahl al-Bayt, including Imam Ridha, alayhi salatu was-salam. That's why he wanted to read this poem in the presence of Imam al-Ridha, alayhi salatu was-salam, and he came to Ma'arif. It is very much well known. The Ibn al-Khuzai is well known by this poem, to which Imam Ridha himself added some couplets, we can say, abiyat, I mean. So about the life of this great poet, we should say that the Ibn al-Khuzai was born actually in 148 of Qamari.
Yes.
And some other researchers say that he was born in 142. Anyhow, but he is originally from Kufa.
Yes.
But he lived in Baghdad.
Yes.
Living at the time of Khulafa al-Abbasi.
Yes.
And of course, about his forefathers, it is said that his father was Da'bil. Mm-hmm. Ali ibn Razin, this is the name which is given, which is known from his father. And of course, Yes, he composed lots of poems, hundreds of poems, particularly relating the Ahl al-Bayt alayhi salatu wassalam, and particularly the one which was composed by Da'bil for the Imam Radha alayhi salatu wassalam.
That's
is
right.
Very much well known. And
yes,
also
we'll
it is said that some of his children was also narrators and great poets, like Hassan or the other children of him.
That's right. We'll get to that part too. So all in all, we could say that the Bilal al-Khuzai main presence and composition of the poems happened during the time of Imam Reza alayhi salam, isn't it?
Yes.
When he was in Mar, Khorasan. So what picture his poems gives us, Sheikh Fadai? I mean, what is the main content of the poems of the Bilal al-Khuzai?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, at that time, at the time of Imam Reza, the king started to introduce a new policy. Because the previous kings, they fought imams very, very clearly. Like, for example, what they did with Imam Qasim, they put Imam in the prison for many years, and after that they killed him, they parted Imam very clearly in front of Shiite society. But what Ma'mun did was completely different.
Uh-huh.
You know, he decided to bring Imam in his castle as a prison.
Uh-huh.
No, they called him Waliahd.
Yes.
The
but it was a control room.
Yeah,
in fact,
it was.
That's
you know,
why.
Exactly a prison in
a
order
prison,
not
right.
to have access to Imam. But at that time, most of people they were fooled by that. They believed that Ma'mun is a good Shiite for Imam, and Ma'mun respect Imam and wanted to give the Khilafah back to Imam. But it was a lie. It was not the reality. At that time, some people like Da'bil, they wanted to show the reality to people. They wanted to teach people, this is not what you think. By his poem, I think he used his poem as a sword in order to fight the kingdom.
Yes.
Because fighting directly was not possible. But indirectly, uh-huh. yes.
Yes.
He could fight the kingdom indirectly. Because of that, when we read the history about Da'bil, we realize that usually he was escaping from the soldiers of kings.
Yes.
Because they were after him in order to find him and kill him.
Yes.
So why? The question is why? He's a poet.
Uh-huh.
And poets were free at that time. And people, even the kings, were proud of their poets. It means that Da'bil was not like other poets uh-huh. to, I don't know, exaggerate about kings in order to make kings lovable, lovely
yes.
in the heart
right.
of people.
Okay.
Of course, vice versa.
Yes.
He tried to fight the kingdom. So that is the role that Da'bil had at that time. A real Shia, a real defender of Imam, to show people the reality about Ma'mun and Imam Reza. And he was successful. What is the sign of his success?
Yes.
Is that they killed him.
Uh-huh.
If he was not successful,
yes.
there were no reason to kill him. Why all the kings killed Imams, all the Imams? Because Imams were some obstacle for their way.
Okay.
So Da'bil was like that.
Okay.
He was an obstacle for their way of battle.
That's right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah. Sheikh Rouhani, let's get to the most outstanding qasida of Da'bil, which was recited before Imam Reza alayhi salam, up to an extent that Imam admired him. Give him salam. Salam means a kind of gift. Of course, the imams were not waiting for someone to admire them, okay? But if some people do some good or favors towards them, they did not leave them without salam. Whether it be poem, help, or any type of thing. So Qasida Ta'iyah is the main Qasida of Debel in admiration of the Ahl al-Bayt. First of all, give us an explanation. Why is it called Ta'iyah? And what is the main content of this Qasida in admiration of the Ahl al-Bayt?
Yeah, this is the very well-known poem composed by the Abil. Regarding the content of this poem, it starts with these points mentioning that Da'bil says that I cried a lot in Arafat for the houses of the houses that I saw there, and I cried and cried a lot. And then he goes mentioning the house of Abdullah, father of the Holy Prophet, and then mentioned the houses of Ali, Hassan and Hussein, Ja'far al-Sadiq, Hamza, Imam al-Sajjad, Abdullah ibn Abbas, all these great figures. He mentions that I cried on the houses of these people I mentioned, because these houses were the houses of Ahl al-Bayt, the houses of Wahid, the houses of Jibra'il, in which the Jibra'il descended. And of course, then he went on mentioning the, let's say, events of Ashura and Karbala, and saying that I cried for the Abu Abdullah al-Husayn al-Salam in Karbala, what happened to this great imam. And continuing mentioning the other imams, Imam al-Sajjad, Imam Zain al-Abidin, and Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq, Imam al-Kadhim, mentioning that we have to cry for these great imams, who are the house of Nabuwa, who are the house of Imama, who are the house of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When he reached to this part of the poem, which was about the Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salatu wa salam in Baghdad, here Imam al-Ridha alayhi salatu wa salam added this poem, قَبْرٌ بِطُوسٍ يَا لَهَا مِنْ مُسِيبَةٍ. This couplet, or these, let's say, poems added to this poem by Imam Ridha himself. Yes, Da'bil, you have to, after he mentioned crying on the grave of Imam al-Sajjad, Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq, Imam al-Kadhim, and he mentioned the places of the graves of the imams, he said that you have to cry on an abandoned or a lone kind of grave who that will be in Tus, the city of Tus.
Yes.
Then Da'bil asked that asked the Imam alayhi salatu wasalam that may my father and mother would be sacrificed to you. What is this place and whose grave will be here in Tus? Imam said that my grave will be in Tus, and you have to cry on my grave, which will be abandoned and alone. So this is the poem that is added by Imam Ali ibn Musa Rida alayhi salatu wasalam to the poem composed by Da'bil al-Khuzai.
The Qasida Ta'iyah is called as Madarasul Ayat 2, isn't it? Madarasul Ayat. This ayat refers to the infallibles, I mean the 14 infallibles, and Madaris means the place, isn't it?
Yes.
So in this poem is mainly talking about what? The main, for example, the resting place, or it's better to say graves of the holy tombs of the infallible imams?
You know, ayah means a sign.
Yes.
Because a prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, they were signs of God on the earth in order to find the way of Haq. Madaris means some teachings about them. These are schools, that teach you about those signs of God.
Okay.
As I told you, they use the poem in order to teach people, in order to introduce Haq to people. Because of that, it is called Madaris Ayat. But I want to mention some point about that, about teaching Haq. Something come to our minds, that why did Ahlul Bayt donate the poets like what kings did?
Donate, you mean giving salah?
Give them salah,
yes.
Salah
gift.
Yes.
Okay, okay.
Give them gift. Because it was a custom. When poets composed a poem for the kings, they used to give them some donation, some gift.
Okay.
And we can see in the history of Ahlul Bayt that they did as well. So what is the difference? You know, the difference is the goal and destination. I want to give an example. Very good. Example, sometime you are making some houses for people in order to help them to have house, and someone comes and help you. So you thank him, you appreciate him, and you give him some prize or you give him their wage. Uh-huh. So that is a help, that is a wage. But another person is making a castle for himself in order to oppress people and govern people. And then someone comes uh-huh. and help him. Yes. Again, the oppressor yes. appreciate him okay. and give him. So what is the difference between these two donations?
For example, defending an oppressor or yes. an oppressed, zalem or mazlum.
Yes,
that's right.
You know, kings were in the side that they wanted to fool people about themselves uh-huh. in order to govern people and oppress them.
Or spread their powers over the lands they were ruling.
Anyway, even Pharaoh needed the support of people.
Yes.
You know, we have in Quran, فَاسْتَخَفَّ قَوْمَهُ فَأَطَعُوهُ. Even Pharaoh needed the support of people. Pharaoh tried to fool people. So one of the tools that you can fool people is art. Uh-huh. But Ahlul Bayt didn't use poem for as a tool in order to fooling people. Right. No, but for teaching people, yes. for making them alive. They donated the poets yes. because they were helpful uh-huh. in the way of guiding people That's and right. making people alive. And we can see that in that name, Madaris Ayat, uh-huh. a school right. for teaching yes. people about the signs of God.
I really invite our dear listeners to refer to the, we can say, English translation of this Qasida Ta'iyya. We can say, really good fruitful and rich content exists in this poem regarding the life of the Ahlul Bayt and the 14 infallibles. This is really nice. Thank you very much, Shaykh Fadai and Shaykh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the life of the Ibn al-Khuzai and Qasida Ta'iyya in admiration of the Ahlul Bayt. In the year 246 or 47, he was killed, and the main reason was, we can say, opposing the Abbasid caliphs through his literature and the poems that he composed. The burial place of this man is not known, but some people believe that he is buried in the southern Iran, at that time Ahwaz or Shush. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us and on the life of the Ibn al-Khuzai. It was very fruitful discussion regarding his life. For more information, you can visit our website at parstudio.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amal.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB